The Buffalo News Ice Time podcast is brought to you by Express Windows. Windows starting at $389 installed. Visit expresswindowsinc.com.
Welcome to the latest shift of the Ice Time podcast here at buffalonews.com. And for the first time since 2007, we can actually say a second round playoff series discussion. Back in 2007, Rachel Lindsay, there were no podcasts in the world, let alone at buffalonews.com. But here we are today, getting ready to talk about Game 1 of the Sabres and the Montreal Canadiens Wednesday night in KeyBank Center. But before we actually dig into this series, there was some big news on Tuesday after practice at KeyBank. Tell us a little bit about what is the latest with Sabres fourth-line center Sam Carrick.
Sam Carrick is back, at least in practice. He came back after sustaining a left arm injury March 31st when he hit the ice after a fight with New York Islanders left wing Anders Lee, which is a very awkward play. He went off holding that left elbow, upper left arm, and we hadn't seen Sam Carrick since, you know, upper body left arm injury. And he came back, skated for the first time with the team on Tuesday in practice. Now, Lindy Ruff, it was interesting. He said on Sunday he didn't believe that either Noah Östlund or Sam Carrick would be back for the second round. But then you were at the availability yesterday where Lindy said, well, Sam Carrick's going to check with the doctor today. We're going to see if he's going to be available. We went to the doctors, got the clean bill of health, and he's back on the ice today working out with the team. And one of the things about Sam Carrick, you get him back for the playoffs. You get that penalty killer at center. You get that fourth line faceoff specialist. Lindy Ruff likes the fact that he's a specialist on the right-handed draws as well, which is a situation where Lindy said we weren't doing great on that as well. And one of the things about Sam Carrick, you get a really, really good defensive forward, that fourth line plug-in check-in guy who was playing in a bit of a tear, believe it or not, late in the regular season on the line with Beck Malenstein on the right wing and then going between Tyson Kozak, Peyton Krebs on the left wing as well, too. So you get that veteran presence, that good faceoff guy. And even Lindy even joked, you know, those 13 games at the end of the regular season he played with us, he was on pace for a 40-goal season, which is unheard of in Sam Carrick's character. We saw a little bit of like a wry grin out of Lindy when he said that as well. But that is a move. Once Sam Carrick is back in the lineup, we probably won't see him in Game 1. We may see him in Game 2, depending on the outcome of Game 1. That's a guy you really, again, you fortify your depth at center, especially with the loss of Noah Östlund to the lower body injury. You get that faceoff presence back against the Montreal Canadiens, who are a very, very good faceoff team. And you get more depth and more experience on the penalty kill when you get Sam Carrick back in the lineup.
Now, we should say that there was no clarity given on Tuesday when Sam Carrick was actually returning. And I agree with you. I don't think it's very likely after one practice we would see him in Game 1. And I also agree that if the Sabres win Game 1, they might be willing to give Sam Carrick a little more of a break here and more prep time and get him in Game 3. I think certainly he's going to be in the lineup in Game 2 if they're down. And you're right, the faceoff situation is concerning against Montreal. They could use Sam Carrick. But at minimum, certainly Sunday, Lindy Ruff had ruled him out for the series along with Noah Östlund. But at minimum, we know Sam Carrick is definitely going to play in this series, and that's going to be a big addition to the Sabres lineup. But we hear a lot of discussion about a fourth-line center here. But Sam Carrick was a big acquisition at the trade deadline, made a big impact, acted like he had been on this team for a much longer time than he was. So it was a big loss that was felt at the end of the season and against Boston. And other than that, right, I'm correct in saying there's no other real health issues on this team right now, right? It's just Carrick and Austin are the two guys we keep asking about. And
pretty much,
you know, we have the answers on both now.
Yeah, and the interesting thing about Sam Carrick, he told us this afternoon, he said it wasn't a shoulder injury. It wasn't a break of any kind. So I guess we got to kind of read the tea leaves that Sam Carrick gave us. Now, my first inclination is it was some kind of elbow injury.
Yes.
Probably. It could have been a separation. It could have been a deep contusion. I mean, those elbow injuries are nothing to mess with as well. It could have been a ligament issue. We don't know. We're going to keep surmising as to what's happening. But that's one place where the Sabres have kind of lucked out so far in the playoffs is health-wise. You know, they're getting Carrick back. Östlund's the big loss. Another guy we had saw in practice today, Konstal Hellenius, skated with the team. He was brought up from the AHL, Rochester, the AHL. to be part of the Black Aces, but they put him out there as well.
Well, and Lindy Ruff said it's another guy who can play some center if they have a need up front. You can see Consolanius in here, and that's, you know, something that you have to watch the injury factor for the playoffs. So the Sabres go into this series relatively healthy. Let's first of all get your reaction here. Game 7, Montreal and Tampa Bay. The Sabres are sitting in abeyance, just waiting for their opponent. And we see what realistically goes down as one of the more bizarre Game 7s in NHL history, with the Montreal Canadiens pulling out a 2-1 win despite getting only nine shots on goal, Ferris.
And three
in the last two periods. If you're the Tampa Bay Lightning, how do you sit all summer on that game?
Well, the other thing that jumped out to me, and I think it was Sportsnet that maybe tweeted this out, that said the Montreal Canadiens did not put a shot on goal in the second period. It was the first time ever in the vaunted history of the Montreal Canadiens, the New York Yankees of the NHL, that they had never put a shot on goal in one period in the playoffs. I mean, poor Jean Béliveau's just got to be like crying in his beer at this point. Like, what is this team? What has happened to my team? Blah, blah, blah. But somehow this team gutted out. I think in the end of the regulation, Mike Matheson, who isn't the best hockey player in his marriage, shout out to Emily Falzer, Nichols graduate and Olympic gold medalist, sends the puck over the boards. They have to take that delay of game penalty. And it's like, oh, that wasn't a good move. I think it was Nick Suzuki came up with a fantastic block shot against, I believe it was Nikita Kucherov. Refresh my memory if I'm wrong. But I said, man, you know, Nick Suzuki, really, and the Canadiens really stepped up in crunch time for that team, despite all that. And to me, that kind of showed, like, that defense had to carry that team. They had no choice but to carry that team in a game where you only put nine shots on goal.
I just can't believe watching that game and that entire series. Nikita Kucherov had one goal in the series. He's got 3 goals in his last 31 career playoff games. 1 goal in his last 22 career playoff games. The Lightning have lost a ton of home games at home. They've lost in the first round 4 years in a row. They've lost a ton of home games. Andrei Vasilevsky has looked mortal in goal. They had been to 3 straight cup finals. And here's another case. Game 7, it's tied up with 9 minutes to go. And Vasilevsky gives up the Alex Newhook goal that turns into the winner. Batted out of midair, off his body into the net. I mean, that just cannot happen. And Vasilevsky on Tuesday gave quite a statement at the Lightning's breakout day when he talked about John Cooper's statement after the game that sometimes the hockey gods haven't been with the Lightning. And he's like, what about the last 3 years? He said, it's about all of us. I have to make saves. Defensive guys have to make plays, and offensive guys have to score goals. And if we don't do that, we're not going to win. And at some point, we have to do that. And he's right, because the Buffalo Sabres and the Montreal Canadiens are the 2 survivors here in the Atlantic Division. The Tampa Bay Lightning's window is closing. They're aging out here. Some of these players are not getting any younger. Victor Hedman didn't play in the series, you know, for personal reasons. Right now, you say to yourself, you probably expected the Tampa Bay Lightning to win that series. They had a great season. But it leaves the Sabres to play the Montreal Canadiens. And now, as we move to our next topic here, let's talk about breaking this down. When you think about the Montreal Canadiens right away, it looks at Cole Caulfield, Nick Suzuki, Juraj Slafkovský.
Upgrade your home with Express Windows, your local source for windows, doors, and siding. Window installation start at just $389 with a lifetime warranty on parts and labor. Our streamlined process delivers the fastest installation in just 5 to 7 weeks. From consultation to cleanup, our pros make it easy, affordable, and built to last. Visit ExpressWindowsInc.com to get started today. Express Windows, value, speed, and craftsmanship for every home.
What are your thoughts on dealing with that top line?
I look at the Montreal Canadiens and I see the top line as far as offense goes, but then I see everybody else. And this is where I think the Sabres have the edge. They have more depth, particularly on those first 3 lines. I mean, let's be real, that Doan, Norris, Benson line, I think that's the most well-rounded line of the Sabres right now. I mean, yes, the Tage Thompson, Peyton Krebs, Alex Tuch, they're bringing the juice as far as scoring goes. But you've got Josh Norris, the faceoff guy, who's coming back in good health. You've got Josh Doan, who can punch in a timely goal when you need. You got Zach Benson, who's become the brand new Brad Marchand of the playoffs. I think the Sabres' depth offensively is what's going to win them the edge. And I look down at the scoring. I mean, it was Alex Newhook who scored that goal with a third line guy, correct? And I just, wow, you know, for once, one of these guys came up from their second line center. Someone else besides the group. We didn't see a lot of production out of Montreal's top line, particularly Slavkovsky as well. So I think that's got to be a concern. Montreal's got to pick up their scoring pace also. But I do wonder what is behind that first line from Montreal.
Well, they have made some changes. That line mm-hmm. was broken up at times during
yep,
that Tampa
it was.
Bay series.
Yeah.
And I do think you always have a situation when you have a top line like that and you're a top line heavy team. Do you want to load it up? Or do you want to spread it out? We've seen that with Edmonton the last couple of years. Do you want to run Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl together, or do you want to spread it out? The Oilers have tended to spread it out, and they run 29 and 97 together at the end of games and they need a goal. Montreal's kind of in the same boat here. Do you want to spread it out, or do you want to load it up? It's hard in the playoffs to load it up mm-hmm. with any top line because teams key on them so much. You look at the Sabres right now, and Tage Thompson doesn't have a goal since game one against Boston. Alex Tuch was really the guy who got a lot done against the Bruins, and the Sabres need to find some secondary scoring as well. When you look at the McLeod-Zucker-Quinn line, really had a terrible time through much of that Boston series. You know, the goal that Pastrnak scored in game six was just a terrible play by Quinn and McLeod at center ice, a bad pass, a hit off the puck, a two-on-one the other way. So you really have to get that secondary depth scoring, and both teams are going to be looking for that in this series because the other one is going to be looking to shut down the top line. Mm-hmm. Now, the other matchup here, when you look at Buffalo's defense, having Dahlin creating offense, and in the first round against Boston, Owen Power and Bowen Byram did a terrific job creating offense. But the Montreal Canadiens, obviously, we learned last season, the depth on defense they have and the offensive ability of a guy like Lane Hutson. Now, they're going to get Noah Dobson back here. He came back at the end of the Tampa series. That's a big addition. But Lane Hutson is a guy who can give them the kind of things that Rasmus Dahlin and Bowen Byram can give the Sabres. The Bruins didn't have that. Charlie McAvoy had a terrible series. I don't think he was healthy, obviously. He didn't really have a lot of impact. What about Hutson? How dangerous can Lane Hutson be for the Buffalo Sabres?
That's a guy you have to key in on as well. But again, I look at this. If Lane Hutson is the offensive defenseman on this team, the rest of that team's got to play defense as well. I think the Sabres do have the edge in that their defensemen have more depth, not scoring-wise, but overall and well-rounded-wise. I mean, you cannot match what Lane Hutson does. I don't think anybody can, but at the same time, someone who's going to draw the assignment? Well, who shuts down Lane Hutson? But who's going to also draw the assignment for the Canadiens? If Lane Hutson is shut down, who picks up the slack there as well, too? You know, how much depth do the Canadiens have if Lane Hutson is contained against the Sabres? Who's the guy that's going to be the one to step up for the Canadiens if that happens? If, just saying, talking in supposition here.
In goal, another key area of any series, but really interesting in this series. You have the 30-something, Alex Lyon, starting off at least with the reins for the Sabres. Who knows if UPL gets back in the net if Lyon has a bad game. I think Lindy Ruff has shown the willingness to change like he did in the Boston series. But for now, Lyon was one of the best goalies in the league in the first round. So he's going to get the start for Buffalo. Dobish for Montreal, a rookie. Now, let's not go crazy here. He's been the best rookie goalie in the league all season for the most part. He was terrific most of the time against Tampa. But I'm willing to say to you, let's watch the Ken Dryden and the Patrick Waugh and even the modern-day Carey Price comparisons here. You know, that run that Dobish had against Tampa Bay was a little more reminiscent of what Yaroslav Halak did for the Canadiens in 2010. I'm not going to be selling Ken Dryden for Jakub Dobish just yet. Now, he can prove me wrong. He can win another series. We could all say, boy, it looks like another great Canadiens rookie goalie run. But we saw against Tampa Bay, the guy knows how to play the game. The guy knows mm-hmm. how to be in the right positions. The only goal the Lightning scored in Game 7 was a tip, and really Mike Matheson caused the problem there with a screen. Lindy Ruff talks, you've heard it nonstop all season, about traffic. Pucks to the net, traffic in front. Realistically, how basic is this going to be for the Sabres against Dobish? Just creating chaos in front of him, there's not going to be a lot of pretty plays here. I mean, what do you think about Lyon and Dobish in the goaltending matchup?
Okay, I'm going to start with Dobish and the incident, the meaning of the traffic thing. I like that. I am a big fan of guys who can screen the goalie, whether it's one guy. I think back to Patrick Hornquist when he played for the Penguins. I think back to Tim Kerr when he played for the Philadelphia Flyers way back when. This is where you need a guy like Jason Zucker to come in and be that buzz around the net to distract Dobish a little bit and really feed off from there. But as far as the goaltending matchup goes, Mike, I'm torn here. I don't know who has the edge on this team. You've got Alex Lyon, who brings the experience, but the question for him is, how long is this run going to last for Lyon? Is he going to be able to carry the weight of this? And that's not a knock against him, just because we haven't seen this in the NHL for him. He was brought in for this ability to jump into any situation, and now he gets a chance to prove he can carry a goaltending load in the playoffs as well. But my question with Alex Lyon is, how long is this going to last? With Dobish, yes, he brings a youthfulness, and people forget he played last year in the NHL playoffs as well. He's still a rookie, but he has that playoff experience as well. And that's the same thing I wonder, when's this going to run out for Dobish? Are we going to see, like, I don't know, guys run out of gas and we get an 8-7 game or another one, you know, where it's like goaltending is optional here. I just wonder, I don't know who has the edge in this. I mean, I guess just looking at this from a consistency standpoint, it's Dobish because he's played more games consistently in the last two seasons in the playoffs. But I'm torn.
And Alex Lyon, of course, don't forget, did have a good run with the Florida Panthers that landed him early on in the Stanley Cup final in 2023. Mm-hmm. So we'll have to see, you know, which way this goes. I do think Lindy Ruff will have a quick hook. If Lyon runs into trouble, I think we will see Luukkonen again. If Lyon keeps playing well, I don't think we'll see Luukkonen. I think Lindy Ruff was willing to go with one if one stood out. And, you know, it's not really fair to Luukkonen that he literally had one bad period and that cost him the gig. But it was a bad period after a few weeks of good play. And you really can't ever forgive that half-ice backhand from Morgan Geekie in the Boston series. But having said that, there'll be no hesitation after a loss to put Luukkonen in there. Now, the Sabres have a situation where they have two guys they trust. The Canadiens, if something happens to Dobish, that's a little bit of a different story here. Sam Montembeau didn't have a great year. The Sabres saw Jacob Fowler, their prospect, once. It'd be interesting to see which way the Canadiens would have to go. Let's assume everything health-wise goes fine for Dobish. As we go to the last segment here, Rachel, and we actually break this thing down, we're going to do our picks. I want to bring up this point to start. The atmospheres in this series should be unbelievable. We know what's going on inside and outside KeyBank Center. Let me tell you something. If you've never been to Bell Center in Montreal for a game in November, it's an experience, let alone what we are about to see in the month of May. And I'm already seeing the pictures of thousands of Red Clan Canadian fans outside the Bell Center. So it's going to be a crazy scene. But you look at it, the Sabres just played a series against Boston where the road team went 5-1. The Canadiens just played a series against Tampa where the road team went 5-2. And it was interesting to me how Lindy Ruff mentioned the other day that sometimes in the playoffs, you get a little reckless at home. The crowd is so crazed and so fired up that it takes you off your game a little. And we saw that both of these teams, I think, in their respective series. Both teams blew a chance to clinch the first round at home. The Sabres lost in overtime. The Canadiens lost in overtime in Game 6. The Sabres in Game 5. So I'm really thinking the home ice advantage here hasn't proven to be that big an advantage so far, and these teams are able to survive. Tell me a little bit. You had your experience this year in the media aspect for the first time at the Bell Center. What in the world do you think this is going to be like in the Bell Center in the playoffs?
I expect absolute pandemonium at the Bell Center. Okay, I forgot who I was talking to. Maybe it was you. Maybe it was Kevin Paul DuPont from Boston. Or maybe it was another writer. was talking about my two experiences. I think the two best atmospheres I've been in this season for hockey: Madison Square Garden when the Rangers yep. Sabres played, because it was like a nightclub. They had the bumping music, the crazy lights. You're in the rafters. You can't hear yourself think. Henrik Lundqvist walks by and he's dressed to the nines. I felt like a nightclub. And someone said, well, if you think Madison Square Garden is like a nightclub, you might as well equate the Bell Center to a cathedral. I've been to the original Forum. I was not there for a game. I shouldn't say the original, the Forum before the house, before the Bell Center. And I remember it was the summer of 1990. I took a tour of it. And I said, oh my God, this is hallowed ground. I would have loved to have seen a game there. But even in my experiences in regular season games, I covered the game in October and one of the games in January in Montreal. I couldn't hear myself think. I mean, I remember walking in and picking up my credential, and the guy behind the security desk says to me, welcome to the Mecca of hockey. And I was like, they take this thing seriously.
Yes, they do.
I love it. I mean, I love the passion of that fan base. I love the energy of the Bell Center. I love the fact, even when the players walk onto the ice, the walkout song is Fix You by Coldplay. Mike, you might not know that one, but the crowd gets so loud, you can't hear it play. And that energy and that volume carries through the course of 16 minutes. And then, the other fun thing in January, there was a mascot party. So UP hosted all of his furry friends, which is, and Chelsea Green from WWE was there. So things just got crazier. And I said, oh my God, if it's like this in January, what's it going to be like in April? And think about it, Mike, Sunday night, they had a watch party at the Bell Center. The place was packed. The place was loud. And I said, imagine if there were two teams on the ice playing a game seven. This is when you need the old decibel counter from Cap Center in Landover, just to know how loud it is.
I'm down with UP in the world of mascots. And it is noteworthy. Great. Noteworthy, you just mentioned the Sabres announced they are having a watch party in KeyBank Center for game six of this series. That's something for people to look for as well. All right. So you get to be on the spot first. Sabres versus Canadians. Who are you picking? How many games?
Sabres in five. I like the depth at forward. If Sam Carey comes back again, he's going to give them such a boost on faceoffs against a faceoff team. I want to see Jason Zucker create traffic and be a buzzsaw around the net. Doesn't have to score goals, but he's got to distract Jakub Dobish from his game. I like the depth of the defense. My only question mark is the goaltending, just because I don't know which way to go on this. Sabres in five.
I like the Sabres as well. The bottom line here in this series is much the same as it was against the Boston Bruins. The Sabres are better. They are the better team. They are the Atlantic Division champions. Now, they have had trouble the last couple of years against the Montreal Canadiens. It is a tough team for them to defend, and I certainly have concern about Cole Caulfield going crazy against the Buffalo Sabres like he can. The Sabres as a whole just really found their stride, I thought, against the Bruins. They didn't play real well in Game 5, but they were terrific in the three road games. I think even Lindy said the other day, we have to improve our home game. And I think he's talked to them about just being yourselves and not being reckless. He used the word reckless, I think, intentionally, because I think that's what he saw during the games in KeyBank Center against Boston. I do think this is going to be a little bit longer. I do think it's a six-game series. Mm-hmm. It could be seven. In general, I think the Sabres need to avoid Game 7 anyway. They've only won one Game 7 in their history back in 1997 against Ottawa. But I like the Sabres in six. You like the Sabres in five. I really think we've been in these playoffs on a collision course. What did we celebrate this year, the 20th anniversary of 2006? I think we've been on a collision course of a Buffalo-Carolina East Final, and I think that's where we're going.
I saw a very interesting piece of trivia circling around on social media. You know, we've got three of the four teams that are left in the Eastern Conference with Adams division roots. We got the Buffalo Sabres, the Montreal Canadiens, and the Carolina Hurricanes. Let's be real, they'll always be the Hartford Whalers. And if you want to count a fourth team with Adams division roots, the Colorado Avalanche, formerly known as the Quebec Nordiques. So there's still a chance for that all Adams division Stanley Cup final. I'm afraid I may have jinxed it by saying it. Yeah. But
now, I had not, to be perfectly honest with you, I had obviously thought of the Carolina-Hartford connection. It just hit me right now, what you were saying about Colorado being the Quebec Nordiques. So, yeah, that's That's pretty unbelievable. If you're looking for the hockey gods and some karma here, maybe the Adams Division karma can carry the Sabres onward.
The,
but
the Adams Division gods are smiling down on the playoffs right now. Somewhere so, Michel Goulet is smiling.
So we're going to have all the coverage online at BuffaloNews.com and in the Buffalo News. Rachel and I will both be in Montreal for all the craziness there. And who knows if we're going to continue Adams Division coverage with the Hartford Whalers and maybe at some point the Quebec Nordiques here as the Sabres move on in the playoffs. But stay with us for everything here at BuffaloNews.com. For Sabres beat reporter Rachel Lindsay, this is news sports columnist Mike Harrington. The series starts Wednesday night. Follow all the coverage. Thanks for watching and listening.
Happy playoffs.
Express Windows is a best of 716 favorite for window and door installation. They also offer discounts for military personnel and seniors. Learn more at ExpressWindowsInc.com. Express Windows. Fast, easy, affordable.